Why and how can Jeremiah say things that are so far from the ideal as seen in Jesus? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host and study guide author. We continue our series on Jeremiah. My conversation partners are again Dave Thomas and Matilda Fry from the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. And I'd like to begin by looking at that question. Technically, we're going to be looking in this lesson at a cluster of, it's a very strange term. It's called Jeremiah's Confessions. And there are about six or seven of those. They're not really confessions, but they're just outpourings of a man who is broken and
Well, they're really dialogues with God, aren't they? I mean,
dialogue with God is a much better term.
Or is it monologue?
Some of them, God responds.
Yeah, yeah.
And in some of them, he says, I want to beat up on my enemies. And God says, okay. And others, God says, no, better stand firm.
So give us an example of one of these, Alden.
Okay. Jeremiah 11, 18 to 23, for example. And I'll just give you the key phrases. Let me see your vengeance on them. He's talking about
this is Jeremiah talking to God now, right?
This is Jeremiah talking to God. Or drag them off like sheep to be butchered. Set them apart for the day of slaughter. You want to contrast that with Jesus. Father, forgive them.
For they don't know what they do.
Or avenge me on my persecutors. And let my persecutors be put to shame, but keep me from shame. Let them be terrified, but keep me from terror. Bring on them the day of disaster. Destroy them with double destruction. Okay, now that's one whole question where it's the attitudes towards the enemies. That contrasts significantly with what Jesus says. Now, help me out. He's an inspired writer. He's in the Bible that Jesus used, but he says things that would, I mean, if you said those things in church, woo.
I'm going to leave this to the Old Testament professors. There are two of them in the room here.
Well, it is not easy to explain in our day, because in our as Christians today, with the understanding of our morals and ethics that we base on Jesus and his life and ministry, it is hard to look into such passages. But from a perspective, if we look at the prophet, at the man himself, and the context and the life that he lived, he was forbidden to marry. His own family rejected him. He came out of a priestly family, and he was beaten up and suffered because of that. So he was truly a person that stood by himself, and everybody else was enemy to him. So God is his only partner. And he talks to God very, very directly, openly. And it's interesting that we don't like to talk like that with God.
No.
But men, people in the Bible have done it. Abraham did it. Yeah. Jeremiah here is doing it, and others. This direct, open conversation and dialogue with God is something that I believe is so intimate and is so clear, open, that I would say that those are moments when God is closest to me, when I am able to express all my feelings from deep down and I don't have to hide.
It would be a tragedy if one had to have only nice thoughts before one could pray.
Yeah.
I mean, I cannot forget the shocking realization that came to me as a young man when I first realized that Habakkuk was basically yelling at God. What are you doing? You know, I mean, look at all these people, you know, wickedness. Why do I have to look? I mean, it's like, whoa. It's kind of shocking. I could never speak to God like that, you know. But I like your point, Matilda, is that you would only do this in the presence of somebody with whom you had a very high level of trust, because you would not open the inner recesses of your struggle in life to a stranger necessarily.
Yes.
See, and so you see this kind of as a reflection. This is an outburst by the prophet. He just can't take it anymore. God, you know, why don't you bring down fire on?
Well, yeah, and I think we need to recognize that as you suggested, Dave, these are not unusual at all.
No, not on the prophets.
But I remember my shock. Somehow, you know, I was a very sensitive, devout kid, very curious kid. But I'd been haunted in my upbringing, not because of my parents, just had been haunted by them. The story of the two she-bears that mauled the 42 boys, you know. Do you open your mouth
for,
to God?
For
you know,
teasing the prophet.
Yeah, for the teasing the prophet. Or the story of Uzzah, you know, you just reach out your hand. So my prayers are very polite. My first funeral as a young pastor was a six-year-old girl who had died of an epileptic fit. Mm. You know, at that point, I didn't know how to yell at God
but
yet.
But you would like to have said something.
But I know I just had to bury it. Yeah. And when I finally went to doctoral studies, that's when I discovered the dialogue between Abraham and God. And I was shocked. If I talked that way to God.
You mean over Sodom?
Over Sodom and Gomorrah. Yeah,
well, yes. How about another, a couple more? If I mean, can we keep bringing the number of righteous people down?
And you can see Abraham's conscience worrying. You know, he says, no, I really shouldn't be talking this way, but until he gets all the way down. As one of my Hispanic students said, sounds like God is a very nice used car salesman and lets himself get down to a very low price. And yeah, Moses, but, the same way. See, those are the two great characters. Moses says, if you do this, you'll ruin your reputation. What will the Egyptians say?
Yeah, and boy, that's an amazing dialogue there.
Well, the prophet and God are partners.
Yeah.
The prophet views the world like God does it.
Yep.
It's not our perspective. It's God's view on the world. And I think that is why he can use those words, that kind of language.
Yeah. That's helpful.
Now, there's one other aspect involved. We've talked about the anger against the enemies, and that's certainly a crucial question. We'll come back and talk about that more because we'll see a lot of that in the book of Jeremiah. But the other question that comes up in these particular confessions is questioning divine justice and goodness. Mm. See, it's one thing to confront God about your enemies, but, you know, and this is what Abraham did. You know, he says, you're the judge of all the earth. You can't do this. You ought to know better than that. Whoa. See. Now, Jeremiah puts it this way, chapter 12, 1. Yet I would speak with you about your justice. Why does the way of the wicked prosper? Why do all the faithless live at ease? Take that. You know,
that's still a big question.
Yes.
You are to me like a deceptive brook, like a spring that fails. I mean, here he's accusing God of being deceptive. See. Or, do not be a terror to me. See, well, those are all key questions that question divine justice and goodness. And again, these are all prayers that are familiar in Scripture. Even from Jesus, you have, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?
Yeah. See, I really like what Matilda said a little while ago, that the prophet is not really looking at the situation or invested in the situation from the perspective of a human. He's trying to see this from the perspective of God, which would then give much more liberty to address God bluntly, like, you know, I'm the one making the announcement, but there's a problem over here, and what are we going to do about that, you know?
Yeah.
And
I, from my perspective, and this is one of the last chapter in Who's Afraid of the Old Testament God, the one thing there that I think what we learn from these prayers is honesty and openness. And it would be a deadly move towards salvation by works if God only published nice prayers from nice people.
But also, I think we have to be careful that this is not disrespect. This is not a manifestation of disrespect. This is asking for clarity. This is saying, you know, here I'm doing something, but it's a mess, and you know what about that over there? You know, I'm taking care of this, but what about that over there? And you know, the justice of God is a huge subject, Alden.
Oh, it is.
It's a huge subject because why does God act sometimes and not others?
And why does he? You know, why does he strike down Uzzah? And why does he? You know, the 42 boys. And interestingly enough, that 42 boys, you can almost see Elisha saying, maybe that was a bit much, because almost all the rest of Elisha's miracles are positive. Now, Elijah, he's got blood all over his hands, you see, and I wouldn't want to have him as a roommate. You know, he is a violent man. But Elisha, that one instance, and then we have Gehazi a little bit later. But still, and I think the reaction of God, the thing that shocked me, is that instead of God stomping on Abraham and stomping on Moses, God did not see this as disrespectful.
No.
He took it, he listened to it, and was grateful.
See? Which may be the component in the 42 boys.
Yep.
You see, when God responds to these kind of things here in Jeremiah, He is so personal. And you could call the response of God like a weeping, God's weeping, God's lament over his people. He calls them always my people, my inheritance, my vineyard, and so on. So they are his own personal, they belong to him. And when you, as a parent, what you see when your children go away, that go out and go far away from you, it tears you apart.
Yeah.
And that is God's response to the prophet. And that is so sympathetic and passionate in this book.
Yeah. Well, of course, you see, even God's track record is not all that great. You look at Adam and Eve and Cain, see, and so.
Well, then you have a remarkable way of saying things.
Do I?
I don't think I would say God's track record is not that great, but I do.
Well, simply from
you, I understand your
you
point.
You understand what I say. Well, I don't want to mislead people, but I know it was such a shock to me to discover how frank and open you could be with God.
Yes.
And I think that has been an enormous help to me, because if I got a problem, there's one place that I can take. And I will take that to God if I possibly can. Now, there is there's a piece here, and I don't think we'll have time to go into it, but there is a an interesting piece by G.K. Chesterton, St. Francis of Assisi, because Francis of Assisi was a very buoyant person. I mean, lived a very difficult life, but he was very buoyant, see. And that's such a contrast with Jeremiah, who lived a very difficult time and was very unhappy. Now, I don't know what it is that makes one person happy and another one's grumpy.
Part of it is personality differences, part of it.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Because you can't just snap your fingers and say, Jeremiah, hey, cheer up. Any more than
he does whine and complain, though.
He does, see. And I listened to a scholarly presentation once that compared Ezekiel and Jeremiah. It was really quite fascinating, because the scholar, and he's a well-known Old Testament scholar, Walter Zimmerle, and he pointed out how Jeremiah wore all his feelings on his sleeve. And his discussion was the hidden prophet, Ezekiel. Ezekiel also had a very unhappy experience.
Yeah, but he didn't.
But he buttoned it up.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, one of the most astonishing statements in passages in the book of Ezekiel is God says to him, I'm going to take away the pride of your life, your wife. I don't want you to cry. I don't want you to mourn. Go about your work. So it just goes on to say, the next day my wife died and I did as I was commanded. it's just astonishing to do that. Well, we're going to be dealing with some more of the confessions next week when we deal about it, and some other aspects that have to do with the personal life. But I want to thank both of you for helping. I want to thank David Olson, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.